Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. He's Seth Lull. I'm Jeff Carrier. We're back for another episode to talk about what to do with these players. Everyone has them on their teams. Everyone's looking at them in the league. Do I trade for them? Do I try and sell this player away? We're going to kind of talk about some of those polarizing, good or bad, or maybe a little bit in the middle of the road players, injured players, whatnot. As we kind of head towards the middle of the season here. So plenty of runway left. So we're going to talk about those players. But first, Seth, while we're 5 weeks through the season, what is the biggest surprise in the fantasy world, good or bad? Biggest surprise 2019.
You mean like a certain player that hasn't either, you know, has done worse than we thought or better, you know, or is that your, yeah, like a certain player?
Well, I say good or bad. So to your interpretation, you know, the biggest surprise on either direction.
Well, there's a bunch. I think I'll go with Juju, how disappointing Juju's been. I mean, he looked like a complete lock to at least be really, really good. I know that the Big Ben injury, you really can't hold that against him, but it just seemed like, I don't know. I guess we'll never know how good he would have been if Big Ben would have stayed healthy.
That's an interesting choice there, considering the quarterback going down in the second game and then going up arguably against the best defense in week one.
I'm not saying that's his fault. I'm just saying it's still surprising. Everything that's transpired, if you wasted a first-round pick in Juju,
All right. You
are pretty bummed out right about now.
Can you give me a better name
than Juju?
Stephon Diggs, surprise?
I was going to say Stephon Diggs. I own him in a couple leagues. Mm-hmm. He's a big player, but yeah. he hasn't the, you know, if you swung and missed on Stephon Diggs, it's not as catastrophic as anybody who drafted Juju in the end of the first round, early second. Do you disagree with these, or you don't sound like you're
gonna I like the Stephon Diggs one, which is why I brought it up. The Juju one, I can't call the biggest surprise because of an injury impacting.
Well, is that not surprising?
The injury to Big Ben, who's been injured kind of often in his career, no.
Well, okay. Well, if it isn't surprising, then why did everybody love Juju, including you, as a lock early second round? If that's so not surprising, if Big Ben getting injured is so predictable and Juju's stock taking a hit, how come
why is Dalvin Cook a second rounder? Because if healthy, their return is tenfold.
Okay, but you weren't a super. You weren't a huge Dalvin Cook guy. You were a big Juju guy.
Yes, I was super onto Juju, and Big Ben did actually finish the last two seasons with 16 games. I guess the reason of when I'm looking at biggest surprise, I'm trying to think of something that's a little bit more in their quote unquote control. You know, even though Stephon Diggs, the team needs to pass the ball, and that's out of his control too. So I don't know why I'm thinking of them as different scenarios, but I do because everything that's in place for Minnesota is still there, whereas Juju doesn't have Big Ben, and they're not passing it over 600 times a game.
I think the one we both miss is DeAndre Hopkins. I think that's clearly – we talked about him on our last pod – but DeAndre Hopkins is the most disappointing player, even more so than Diggs, because you expect more from Hopkins than you do from Diggs. And Diggs really only had one monster year in his entire career. And, you know, some people kind of saw that the Vikings were going to get back to running the football more. And maybe we thought the decline Adam Thielen had in the second half of the season last year was indicative of what to expect in the future. Obviously, to this extent, we didn't see it. But DeAndre Hopkins, considering some of the monster games that Watson has had and that Will Fuller has had, you know, most notably last week, Hopkins has been incredibly quiet all season long, and we're through 5 weeks. I don't know how Hopkins can't be.
Yeah.
So I'm changing my pick to Hopkins, all right, because you just shamed me after I picked Juju, which, by the way, is a very good one too.
I'm just being super defensive of my boy Juju. I don't want to blame it on him. I'm just like – one of those guys wearing rose-colored glasses with Juju and just willing not to put any blame on him for some reason. So
I think I know why. See, we should have saw this coming. Your team name in the league that I'm playing this week is called Juju Know What I'm Saying. I mean, what a loser. Of course Juju's is going to have an off year. I mean, that's your team name.
That was also my team name last year because I also had him last year. So I thought about changing it because I was like, who wants the same team name year after year? But I figured since I had him, I kept him. So
I think, you know what? I still haven't changed my team name in our league. It's still Aguilarious Bastards. And I need to change that. Nelson Aguilar is a complete abomination.
He's a bastard, all right. So
he is.
Well, all right, before we get into the players that, you know, is worth discussing on what to do, how to handle them, we get a lot of questions in our group message in Talking Heads Nation. You know, start this player because they've been doing terrible. Should I try and move them? Yada, yada, yada. Let's quickly touch on the interesting question at hand here. Seth, heading into week number 6, we are recording this Thursday now. So as of today, we're still unsure by the time you might listen to this Friday or the weekend, what to do and how to handle the Chase Edmonds scenario. And let's just pretend, Seth, that everyone's going to listen to this after the Thursday game. So let's not advise them to do anything with, you know, throwing in a certain player for Thursday night. But just in terms of handling the David Johnson and Todd Gurley with Malcolm Brown, Chase Edmonds scenario.
Well, number one, you gotta keep a close eye on the status of Todd Gurley and David Johnson. And assuming they're going to miss time, what I would do is if you own David Johnson or Todd Gurley, I think what you want to do is you want to see what your options are on the bench. So let's just say you have David Johnson, you own Chase Edmonds. That makes it really easy, right? You're just if David Johnson can't go, you're moving Chase Edmonds right into David Johnson's lineup. With Chase Edmonds, I think you want to structure your lineup so that whoever you have, you maybe move him to your flex so you can swap Chase Edmonds in for your flex. Trying to think how to describe this. So if you have two running backs that are locks that you're going to start regardless, keep them there and then put somebody in your flex that you can swap out if Chase Edmonds ends up being the starter. If not, have somebody else ready to go. I think if Chase
or move David Johnson into your flex so that way you can flex him out.
So you have more flexibility. That way you can put a wide receiver in there or a running back. You know, for example, like in the past, I've got burned where I didn't do that, and then I have a running back who ends up not being able to play, and then I don't have any running backs on my bench that I can swap in. Whereas if I had moved him to my flex, I could throw in a tight end, a wide receiver. You can pick somebody up on the waiver wire if your league allows you to do that. It just buys you more lineup flexibility. So I think that's – obviously if Chase Edmonds is playing, you're starting him. He's a must start.
Yeah, and Malcolm Brown, of course. So the tough part is that both of these games are on at 4 o'clock. So depending on your waiver rules, you might be able to pick up a player an hour or right before game start as long as their game hasn't started. If that's the case, then you would be able to pick up potentially a more able starter that's kind of sitting on waivers. Maybe you say you have a bench person that's not really a starter, more of like a handcuff backup that you're hoping can, you know, with an injury become a really good starter. But in a scenario here, you can't afford to start them and you need to go to the waiver wire right beforehand. Hopefully that's the best case scenario with your waiver rules. And one of ours, for example, Seth, ours runs at 11 a.m. So that you would have to make that decision before 11 a.m. on Sunday. Looking at the other games at 4 o'clock, Sunday night, Monday, who are some maybe potential, and there's not really a lot of games here or great options, but if, say, someone wanted to go that route, their bench isn't great, or their bench is filled with people that are more like, you know, a la Chase Edmonds, but they don't have Chase Edmonds, they're waiting for a different injury, maybe Alexander Mattison, who are some other people in these 4 o'clock Sunday night, Monday night games that they can maybe grab before waivers processes? So you have the Tennessee Titans-Broncos game. You got Dallas Jets. You got Pittsburgh Chargers. You got the Lions and Packers. Not a lot there in terms of depth.
Especially, Yeah, especially when it's hard to imagine that any news on Adams is really sorry, I'm battling through a cold here, so apologize for the coughing. It's hard to imagine any news breaking by the 4 o'clock games for Adams. So ideally, you can find somebody within that game that you can pick up ahead of time, so you already have them on your roster. And for those that play against it, that you have a matchup where you're playing somebody who owns Devontae Adams, I would go and pick somebody like that, you know, pick up some of those players to steal them from the opponent so they can't do that. But, yeah, I mean, the problem with these matchups is, like, Marvin Jones, Kenny Golladay are going to be owned in just about every league, right? So you're not going to be able to grab them. You look in the Green Bay game, Geronimo Allison, MVS are probably all owned, especially with the whole Adams injury. People probably picked them up this week if they were even available as early as or as late as this week. But you want to go and you want to – I mean, any point is better than nothing. And Adams is – it all depends on who your other option is. Like if you have – like let's say your other option is somebody like a Curtis Samuel playing Tampa Bay and your matchup is looking very – you know, like you're in really good shape. I would just take the points with Curtis Samuel, right? Because the it all depends on what your other option is. If your other option is starting somebody like, you know, Ronald Jones or Chris Thompson – in like a flex type situation, then it might be worth just riding it out and waiting to and just hoping that Adams plays, and if not, pivoting to somebody else, you know, that might be available on Green Bay. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's really tough with these matchups, like you're mentioning. Most of them are going to be owned. Maybe someone like
Allison's rostered in 34%, only 34% of leagues. So there's a chance that Geronimo Allison is available.
Maybe a – let me look up this player's ownership percentage here real quick. Maybe a – let's see, a Benny Snell. I mean, going deep down here with
– especially with Jalen Samuels now being out, Benny Snell's a pretty solid name.
And I don't know what the ownership is on like Randall Cobb or Jamison Crowder, but obviously they haven't been very productive. Again, if you're waiting till last minute type of scenario, I guess these are options.
Yeah, again, some points are better than no points. Move Adams to your flex if you can. And then even somebody like a Ty Johnson for Detroit who's you know, who is not going to give you much in a game where they might have to score a lot of points might be an option. You know, I don't know. It's not a great situation to be in, clearly. I mean, I have Adams in one league, for example, just to kind of give you an idea of how I'm playing it. And I have a couple options that I like to replace Adams are going tonight. I have Golden Tate and Darius Slayton. So I'm not going with one of those options, but I have Chris Thompson. I have Marquise Brown, who has also been missing practice. So I have a couple different options, and I'm moving Adams to my flex to give me the option of starting any position.
All right, now let's go ahead and move on to the main segment here. I really, really, really want to get into this into these players here. I think this is going to be a great topic. Most of my list here, Seth, we'll go back and forth in terms of me kind of thinking of a player and kind of getting your thoughts on it, and then vice versa, so that way we're bringing up different names. Most of my list naturally is players that aren't really performing well. And we could easily talk about what do you do with this player who maybe you didn't expect to do that great, Cooper Kupp, like we mentioned on the last podcast, or, you know, you name it, someone else. I do have one person who's doing really good at their position. But I guess in my scenario, I want to maybe hear your feedback before I bring up the first name. How often do you find yourself in a situation where you have a player that's completely outperforming what you thought they would, and you're also looking to move them? Because what happens with me is, I say this all the time, it's like I never get – so like I don't love Aaron Jones. He would be someone that I would definitely move on from and try and get what I can. But most of the people that I don't really care for before the season started, I don't own. So I can't – I'm never in a position where I own someone who's doing good that I don't like, if that makes sense. Anyone who I have, like Cooper Kupp or Chris Godwin and those types of players, are because I already love them in the first place. So I'm never willing to move on from that. My general rule of thumb is if you have anyone on your team and you already like them, I don't go look to trade them. there's no point in going to trade them as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's tough to even know what the value or what I would like. I have Chris Godwin in a couple leagues. He's a player that we were both really big on. And you have Cooper Kupp. Like they're both kind of in the same boat. Like, what would it take for me to trade Godwin? Because it's not like it's a fluke. We knew that he was going to be really good this year. He's lived up to his you know, what we thought he was going to do and more. We've seen a ton of upside from them, so they're capable of monster weeks. So it's not like we're, you know, it's like there's no holes in it, and it's not like he's really going to come back down to earth a ton. So, you know, worst case scenario, he comes back a little bit to the mean. And he's just really good instead of not human. And part of it, too, is like we called it. And so we kind of have this attachment to those type of players. So you really have to be blown away in a trade. I mean, sometimes I think it's worth offering a trade and just asking for too much. Trades that will probably get rejected but are still, you know, not scumbag trades, like we always call it. Not these trades where you're trying to completely rip the person off, but a trade where you're asking for two really, really good pieces. I don't know if we can think of a couple off the top of our head as an example. Like, I don't know. For example, like Chris Godwin, offering Chris Godwin to somebody who has, you know, Mike Evans and Joe Mixon. Like, that person probably wouldn't do it, right? Godwin for Mike Evans and Joe Mixon.
Because that person's obviously, on their perspective, is going to say, you know, you're crazy. And, like, Godwin will come down to somewhat, you know, less than human. And Evans will regress back to even if he's not as good as Godwin, he'll regress to a lot closer to Godwin, and that gap won't be Joe Mixon in their eyes. And then you necessarily can't fault him for that, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you propose the trade, and you just fully expect that it'll get rejected. But it's a safe trade to offer because either it gets accepted, and you're like, okay, I got very really good value for Godwin, or it gets rejected, and you don't have to trade Godwin. So. If you have Godwin or Kupp, you're probably in really good shape right now. You're holding on to them.
But even all the players at the top, I mean, you know, someone like Dalvin Cook, who you mentioned, like I wasn't really high on injuries. I mean, I liked him because I knew the upside, but I don't have any shares of him, right? Even if anyone who was high on him is likely the people that drafted him because they believed in him. And even from the outside looking in, if I had Dalvin Cook for some reason, there's no way I'm trading him because has anyone seen the tape of Minnesota? You're not moving that guy.
Yeah, you're probably not moving him. I mean, most people wouldn't. I would still, you know me, I'm a wheeler and dealer. I would be open to trading any running back, really, that's not named McCaffrey just because they're so much more susceptible to injuries. I mean, the way I always look at it is, especially if you're in a deeper league, when you can trade somebody like Dalvin Cook for a legit maybe 3-for-1 and get three really good players, if Dalvin Cook gets injured and he has a history of injuries, then you got three players. Like you're putting all your eggs in the Dalvin Cook basket, which is very understandable. He's a stud, but I would definitely be putting some feelers out there because I know everybody else is gonna really want Dalvin Cook, so. I don't know. Like you're probably not. It's going to be very hard to move those people because they're always going to be more valuable to you probably than to another person.
You did happen to mention a phrase that I think we should get a new drop on, which is the scumbag trade offer drop. I think that would be a nice addition to the soundboard.
You know what we should do is we should have our listeners should email us. The worst trade they got this season, and then we will pick the most scumbag trade offer of them all and break it down and just trash it on the air because we all know we've gotten our share of them.
Yep. Send that to nation@nfltalkingheads.com. All right. I got some really good names here. Let's start diving into these names. I've got quite a few. I don't know how many you have, so we'll try and go through these as quickly as possible. First one, I don't know if I've ever rang the drop on this guy or not, but just for good measure, Seth, Stephon Diggs.
Dead to me.
Is dead to me. But what do you do with him? How do you handle him? What do you do?
Well, you don't start him. That's for starters. I think we're at a point in the season where I'm not letting players, like, and I traded Stephon Diggs for Terry McLaurin straight up a couple weeks ago in one of the leagues that I owned Stephon Diggs. if I still had Stephon Diggs, I'm like, I'm not letting you beat me anymore. I'm going to put you on my bench. And if you have a really good week, then I'm not going to be bummed out that I left you on my bench. I'm going to be like, hey, Stephon Diggs might be back. So either way, you kind of win. Either he does really well on your bench and he gets a ton of points, and then his value at nothing else, if nothing else, his value rises. He doesn't burn you.
Yeah. Well, he did do that 2 weeks ago. You know, I sat him. He went out. He had a good week, got a touchdown, yada, yada. And then the following week, I started him, and then, you know, he doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And you're going to live with that, because the flip side of that is you start him and he completely burns you like he did last week if you started him. So. And obviously it depends on what the alternatives are. But if you have somebody like – I picked up Slayton in a bunch of leagues this week. I would start Slayton over Diggs. And same thing with Golden Tate. I would start both – of them over – see, you don't like – you're not a Slayton guy. You know what?
I know
we're recording this. This probably won't air until after the Thursday game. But I still want to mention Slayton so that when he blows up, I am on – you know, we can roll the tape. And I was out in front of it. I don't know. Let's throw some names around. Like Calvin Ridley is a no-brainer. We're starting him over.
Yeah. How about Curtis Samuel? Right? You love just kind of going to him as a kind of a crutch, you know? Like
I mentioned him once
on this particular episode. Sure.
I know. Well, you know what it is? I have him in one of my leagues where it's extremely top heavy and my flex is terrible, and I'm always like, oh, I gotta start Curtis Samuel, but I don't want to. But he's playing Tampa Bay. Everybody that plays Tampa Bay completely goes off.
So you're Daniel definitely Jones, starting Curtis Samuel over Stephon Diggs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you started at the Slayton range, I guess that gives us our idea of where you're starting Diggs. How about this one? Diggs or MBS?
Diggs. If Adams doesn't play.
I agree, though. I think I go with Diggs. I mean, I am so over MVS. Can I play this again?
Dead to me.
Diggs, I mean, well, let's move on to MVS. MVS is so dead to me. I say he's droppable. You go get a living body on waivers. That's who I'm trying to draw. I'm trying to drop MVS for anyone I can in one of our leagues, and it's in a competitive 12-man league, so I'm having trouble dropping him, but I am finding any solution I can to not have this guy in my starting lineup.
Yeah, because it's like I'm not going to get caught up in the whole, oh, no Adams, so MVS must, you know, he's going to get his share of targets, and he should do something just by process of elimination. It just never seems to happen. That Rodgers can't find a way to give him the ball. I mean, he's getting that. He only had four targets on Sunday, but you know, five or more targets in every other game this season, and it's just only one game with double-digit fantasy points, and that was the game. It was only a game with a touchdown. So, I think they both have incredibly frightening floors. That I'm going to go with Diggs, who has more upside, and somehow probably a little bit less scary of a floor, if that's even possible. But yeah, I agree. I'm going with Diggs.
No, at MVS. All right, you give me a player. I just threw two at you.
All right, Mohamed Sanu, that's probably a
No, it's a good player because, I mean, it's a good name. Someone who, year in and year out, I feel like right in the middle of the season, every podcast has this conversation to some degree, more or less. And right now, here's what I do. You ride in the hot hand. I plug him in. If you're in a deep enough league where Mohamed Sanu is a factor at any degree, just throw him in there. I mean, he's your second flex, yep, third flex, whatever, you know. He's at least at a number two flex right now. If you're in a two wide receiver, two running back, two flex league, he's definitely probably a really good number two flex. Maybe even a number one flex. I don't know.
Okay. All right. You got one for me?
I do. Mike Williams.
Oh, man. I mean,
I got a lot of scumbags on my list, apparently.
You know what? I actually kind of like the spot for Mike Williams this week. Yeah, Sunday night game against Pittsburgh.
Oh boy,
this is a Mike Williams. If there ever was such a thing as a Mike Williams game, I think I would lean to.
Dude, you just talked about Mike Williams and Slayton in the same episode. I might need to burn this tape afterwards.
I know. Well, we are comparing the Diggs though. I mean, this is I don't want to start Mike Williams. You know what? I would probably go Diggs, and it's very close.
You're still on the comparing to Diggs part. Okay, I like it.
I know. I was thinking, should we just do the rest of the episode, just throwing a bunch of players, comparing them to Diggs?
I mean, he finally got, you know, 6 catches for 74 yards last week after never having more than 3 catches on any particular game. He already missed one. In my eyes, if I got any kind of relative value from Mike Williams, like you attach Mike Williams with a Mike Evans, or let's say an Adam Thielen, you attach it with someone who hasn't performed terribly, and the person you're receiving says, okay, I'm hurting, give me these two players. They attach some associated value with Mike Williams. If you get any, you know, 10 cents on the dollar, I'm looking to move him.
I got a good one for you. And this is, we're still using Diggs. Because, I mean, you can't just throw Mike Williams out there and say, what about Mike Williams? Well, I got to compare him to somebody. I mean, if it's just like in a vacuum, do you want to start Mike Williams? No, I don't want to start Mike Williams.
I just mean in general, though. Are you keeping him? Are you dropping him? Or are you or are you starting him over Diggs, as you would love to, turn this segment into?
I'm probably not starting him over Diggs. I'm not dropping him, though. But you clearly want to find a better alternative. I would bench him.
All right, Diggs is above Mike Williams.
Yeah, so here's a really good one to compare to Diggs. Emmanuel Sanders, after starting the year really hot with that opening game, he's had 3 points or less in 2 of his last 3 games. So, and he plays Tennessee at home. Tennessee's got a good defense. I don't know how to read Emmanuel Sanders. He ran the second most routes out of any wide receiver, or anybody from Denver, rather. And still only had a couple targets. I don't know what to make of him. What are you doing with Emmanuel Sanders? And there's some rumors out there that maybe they might trade him.
I think with Emmanuel Sanders, what I'm more or less looking to do is kind of spot play him. I think that I'd still want to keep him on my team. I don't think he's the type of player that you're going to get like real value for, right? Like the name's just not attractive enough. And I think that he's a decent enough player. He's had 3 out of 5 games with 5 or more catches. He's had 3 or 5 games with 15 or more points, all coming without a touch. 2 of them coming with a touchdown. So I want to keep him. I think he's a good flex player. I would even put a little bit of value in him as a potential throw-in if someone treated him, because I think he's a matchup play. Like week 7, they play Kansas City. I like that. Okay. Week 14 and 15, they play Houston and Kansas City again. So decent playoff run there. He's the type of person where he's, you know, probably lower down on your roster anyway, so you can play the matchups with him, and he's a great bye week filler.
Okay.
I think there would be several weeks where I'd start him over Diggs, especially next week against Kansas City. This week against Tennessee, though. Tennessee's a good defense.
Let me
throw one more comment on just Sanders types of players. This is where it becomes so difficult in fantasy, where you bring up Emmanuel Sanders. I'm like, geez, I stopped watching Denver games 3 weeks ago. I don't know what this guy has done. I mean, it's so hard to keep up on every single player and all the nuances if they're kind of just treading water like Emmanuel Sanders has been, and they're playing on a team like Denver. So I don't know. I just wanted to make that comment. Like the crazy thing about, you know, fantasy is we get asked a lot about these types of questions about these types of players that are hard to pinpoint. And what can kind of make it difficult is, you know, there's hundreds of these and it's hard to watch all the games.
So before I get into this next player, I just want to point out out of nowhere, Sammy Watkins is dead to us, right? We were nice to him for a little while. We actually kind of liked him going into this year. Shame on us. Ever since his week 1 explosion,
hold on. I mean, first of all, we were nice enough not to throw him on the players to avoid list for the first time in like a decade, even though he hasn't been around for a decade. So we were nice enough not to do that to him, and he came out with 9 catches. We're like, okay, we were right to not avoid him, or not to put him on the list. And then all he does is come back and score lower points like every single week consecutively, and then goes to get himself hurt. So as you said, Sammy Watkins,
dead to me.
You're dead to me.
All right, I need to get that out of the way because it was bugging me. I was just. So
can we retroactively put him on the list? Just like we knew we should deep down. I don't know.
Who's going to stop us? We make the rules, right? We make the rules. We're going to retroactively put him on our – we're telling people now, if you haven't acquired Sammy Watkins yet, don't acquire him. Please avoid him. Okay?
Love it.
All right. So one player – and this isn't a comparison to Stephon Diggs. We're going to let Stephon Diggs off the hook now. We've been you know, mean enough to him today. I really – what are your thoughts on Allen Robinson? So he's on bye. Let's talk about some players that – if you're in a position like you are in a couple leagues where you're, you know, what, 5-0, 4-1, that you can acquire and give up a lot of some short-term assets because you have that cushion, right? Allen Robinson's a player. I want to get your thoughts on this. Allen Robinson's a player that I would love to target because, number one, he's not a sexy name, right? He's kind of been under the radar. He had a really good week on Sunday against Oakland. But besides that, he's just been solid. And he's on bye, so whoever owns him can't use him this week. And he plays on the Bears. It's like I feel like the Allen Robinson luster has worn off since that one monster year he had in Jacksonville. He's somebody, and he hasn't had less than 7 targets in any game this season. He's just been a complete steady force for Chicago in an offense that's really struggled. He only has 2 touchdowns on the year. So his only 2 touchdowns in the year came last week against Oakland. And he's still been he's put up very respectable numbers. What are your thoughts on Allen Robinson as somebody that you maybe target on his bye week?
Yep, I love it. I completely agree with you. He was actually someone that, to you know, going back to our list here, it was someone I wasn't really in favor of. I just didn't think the upside was there, and kind of the spot where he was going in drafts was a little high for someone that might be a little more blah, but hey, I think one of the best things you could do as a fantasy player is, you know, realize maybe where you're right and you're wrong and either move or double down. And in this case, you know, changing philosophy and saying, hey, Allen Robinson is running 90%+ of his offensive snaps. You know how much I love that number. 88 is the lowest, running 100% last week. He's out there on every single snap on the offense. They have no one else to throw the ball to. Yeah, it's not a super great offense, but he's got the volume. So in a PPR league, and he's your touchdown guy, he's their kind of almost everything kind of person, I'm 100% in agreement in terms of going to grab him. And you make great points in terms of not having that kind of sexy name. I mean, right now, who's going to have a better ending of the year, Allen Robinson or ODB? We know that ODB would be dramatically harder to get, but Allen Robinson.
Well, I'm glad you brought him up, though. If you own Odell Beckham, are you offering him straight up for Allen Robinson? I think I would do that. I think I would at least consider. I would sleep on that trade.
Yeah, I'm probably not gonna do it just because. Let's face it, Allen Robinson just finally got his first 2 touchdowns of the year this past week. Before that, he got none. He's catching 6 or 7 balls a week, which is great. But, you know, these are – outside of last week, he had 12 to 17 catches 3 out of 4 weeks, which is what I'm going to expect out of him. And I don't want to trade a player – that doesn't mean that he's bad or anything like that. And it's a little bit closer to what I thought he would be in the beginning of the year. But I don't want to trade maybe someone like ODB who's got the potential to come around and start having these much bigger weeks that, for example, like Allen Robinson had last week. It's a little early to tell. Like, if Allen Robinson has another one of these types of games, I think you could be right. But I think it would be too difficult to trade away ODB if I had him.
It might be a little bit too early to trade him for somebody like Allen Robinson who really has a, you know, who has limitations. His ceiling isn't. You know, he's got a ceiling. He'll have maybe 1 or 2 games all year like he did last week, but he's a high floor guy. ODB is a stud. You drafted him probably in the early second round. All I'm saying is I think we are now at the point where that trade's at least that's not a crazy trade.
Yeah, and so to pivot to Odell Beckham, I mean, I could probably ring the bell on his destiny. I'm not going to get there yet, but Let's face the facts. You know, he's had 2 bad weeks. One of them against San Francisco, which, I mean, technically he's probably had at least 3 bad weeks to his standards. But you know, the first 3 weeks he caught at least 6 balls. So the last 2 weeks, Baltimore. You know, the surprising thing in Baltimore game was that Cleveland went off and he wasn't part of that. Last week, you know, they played a tough San Fran team who has been playing everyone tough, and they've got great corners there. So I wouldn't read too much into that. But to your point, I would be looking to move him because you can sell everything I just said, right? Tough game matchup. He caught at least 6 balls the first 3 weeks. I think there's still a lot that you can get in return for ODB, so I would move on. But again, he's one of those types of players that I don't own for a reason, right? Like in that spot, I got Juju, which, by the way, is, I guess, a similar type player. I would try and get something for ODB. Maybe it'd be good to discuss what we would be willing to take.
Well, he's a really tough player to trade to, because my suggestion would be hold on to him this week when they play Seattle. It's a pretty good matchup. Seattle's been involved in a lot of high-scoring games. I think this is a pretty good spot for ODB to have a breakout game, if he's ever going to break out. The problem is if he has a really good game, then they're on bye the following week. So then you got to sell to whoever your trade partner is that, hey, you know, ODB's had one good week all season. And, oh, and by the way, he's on bye this week, and he's got a rough schedule when he comes back from the bye. So it's just a really tough spot. Even if he has a breakout game, it's going to be kind of hard to trade him because he's going to be on bye. So then you're not going to be able to trade him to somebody who has a losing record and needs to win this. I mean, this is when trades get difficult as the season goes on, because you got to find the right trading partner, and somebody who needs to win right away isn't going to want to trade for ODB if he's on a bye. Most likely.
No, that he's on a bye, then he comes in and plays in New England. Like, you want to trade for ODB when he's going to give you pretty much a zero bomb or expected zero bomb. That's not attractive. I'll say this, though. And then he plays Denver, then Buffalo, so that's not great either. Super concerns in the next few weeks with ODB's schedule, including the bye. But he does play Cincinnati and Arizona weeks 14 and 15. So, like you mentioned, if you're in a situation where I'm 5-0, you know, when does it become attractive? I don't love ODB, but if you did and you believe in them come back, like, I don't believe ODB because I also just don't believe in the offense and Baker.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have his games, no doubt. And if you're that person, at what point do you try and get the best value you can? Like, you might get it during the bye. This week probably wouldn't be the case. But maybe during the bye, maybe when he's about to play New England, if the owner's just like, I need to win, I can't get another zero bomb. A bye then playing New England is pretty basically back-to-back zero bombs. I mean, let's just face it. Stephon Gilmore is going to get put on him, and he's that's it. He's done. But Cincinnati, Arizona are phenomenal matchups in for the playoffs.
Yeah, I think if after this week, so I'm keeping him this week. After this week, if you are in, you know, sub 500 record and you need to win next week, then I'm trading Odell Beckham for whatever I can get for him. And hopefully his value, and you're going to maybe look to trade him to a team that doesn't need to win next week. That's, you know, maybe 6-2 or whatever, 5-2 or something. And if your team is really good, then maybe, you know, I'm either fine keeping him, or if your team is really good and you don't have ODB, I'm going to offer a 2-for-1 package to whoever has him. You know, maybe two players that have more points than ODB on the season, and hope that whoever owns ODB is just getting frustrated and impatient and is willing to move him. So he's like one of those players where, like, regardless of how you feel, like, you should never be so tied to, like, one or the other. Like, if I don't like ODB, like, if I don't have him, I'm open to trading him, right? But I'm also open to acquiring him at the right price. It all depends on what his price is. Like, if I had ODB right now, like, I would be open to trading him if I can get 80 cents on the dollar. But I'm also I'm fine keeping him, right? That's,
yeah, no, you bring up a good point. Like, I just mentioned that I don't own any shares for ODB partially for good reason. But if the ODB owner came to me and said, hey, I'm struggling, you're 5-0, I need to get rid of this guy. And if I'm the owner of ODB, and like you said, you're looking for 80%, but this guy's really selling, and maybe he hasn't really gone across the market, and he's selling him for 50 cents on the dollar, even though I don't love ODB, I'm going to be like, okay, yeah, always keep your ears open and listening. So it's a great point. All right, next name. Really interesting name and different position here. And on the flip side, someone who's actually been performing really well, Austin Hooper, who is the number one tight end. What are we doing here? 84 points on the year, number one tight end.
I think you're holding on. Me personally, I'm not going to overthink it. I'm just going to hold on to him because especially the way the tight end position is, where in George Kittle had a, you know, the buy low George Kittle opportunity, that window is officially closed. He had a good game. Zach Ertz got back on track, but it's been like, even Kelsey hasn't been super, you know, you're not super pumped with what he's done this year. He's been kind of disappointing. I think if you have Austin Hooper, you're just going to keep him. Like he's just the volume he's getting from Matt Ryan this year is just at a position that's very shallow, and it's hard to overcome if you don't have a good tight end. I mean, your options aren't great usually. There's nobody on the waiver wire. I'm just holding on to Austin Hooper because the reality is he's not somebody that's going you're going to be able to get a ton for. Like,
well, let me ask you this. I kind of thought of this trade here. I think it's kind of a good timing type of trade. And I'm not saying I don't want to do this, but just to kind of throw something out there, would you trade Austin Hooper, number one tight end, averaging about 17 points a week, very solid, above Travis Kelce, Evan Ingram, say for someone who might come back and perform pretty decent when they do, but there's a little bit of an unknown, Hunter Henry comes to mind, and in the process pick up a flex player?
It would. Okay, well, you know how I feel about Hunter Henry, and I don't like Hunter Henry at all. I see, this is the problem. Unless you already have like a Zach Ertz or Evan Ingram or Kelce or Mark Andrews or Disley or Waller or Kittle, if you have another one of those top 10 tight ends on your team, trade Hooper. But if your next best option is like even Gerald Everett or Hawkinson or Jimmy Graham, it would have to depend on who you're able to upgrade at other positions. Like that's where it gets really difficult. And is trading Hooper going to allow you to get a player in return that's going to be a dramatic upgrade over whoever you're starting at wide receiver or running back? I feel like in most cases, Austin Hooper is going to be more valuable to you if he's your best tight end and you don't have a good second tight end option, or you're not getting somebody back in return. So okay. So if you trade Hooper and somebody offers you, Waller and, you know, let's think of one on the spot here. Let's say somebody offers me Darren Waller and Mohamed Sanu.
I'm doing it. I mean, anyone, if you're looking at the top rankings, Austin Hooper all the way down to Kittle, I'm doing anything. I'm okay moving down to any one of those spots if someone for some reason wanted to do that. Like Darren Waller's on bye, for example. But the question starts to change a little bit once we start getting to the Delaney Walkers of the world. And I think your point is spot on. I mean, I agree. I think more often than not, Austin Hooper is going to be more valuable to you. It's going to be hard to justify whatever increase you would get at a positional player. So I agree with you.
Because it's not just the fact that, okay, you can maybe upgrade someone in your flex. It's not just the fact that it'll be hard to make that upgrade worth it, but it's so much easier to find fixes at other position than it is at tight end. There's just never tight ends available that you can really depend on, whereas you can always find a wide receiver, you know, based on injuries that will be, you know, useful and serviceable. So to answer your question, I'm probably keeping Austin Hooper unless somebody just really needs a tight end. They're sick of getting 0 points and they're willing to pay up for him. But
all right. You got a player that you want to mention now.
So one player, I got a couple. Let me see which one I want to talk about here. Let's talk about DJ Chark because
that's a good one. I had him on my list.
So I don't think that either of us aren't buying into DJ Chark in terms of like, we don't think this is a complete fluke. He's the real deal. He's going to be at least very solid moving forward. It's not like he's going to fade into oblivion. As long as Minshew is a starter, DJ Chark is going to be a problem for opposing defenses and whatnot. But if he is the fifth ranked wide receiver, due in large part to this 37 point fantasy, you know, explosion that he had last week. DJ Chark is somebody that I'm looking to shop. I think he's a great find. You picked him, most likely you either got him at the end of your draft or you picked him up off waivers week one or two, right? So you're playing with house money at this point if you have DJ Chark. And it's been a fun ride. But if I can, you know, if I have a, like in one of my leagues, I'm starting Chris Thompson and Carlos Hyde. If I have a league where I have a big deficiency at a running at the running back position or a tight end, maybe I look at DJ Chark and try and move him for an upgrade and for a 2-for-1. He's somebody that I think you should definitely look into at least exploring the trade market for.
I agree. Kind of like the Allen Robinson thing, the name is going to bring down probably what you can get. I mean, he's up there for a league, somewhere near the league high for receiving touchdowns at 5. And that obviously has a big impact on his scoring. I do think that he is the quote-unquote real deal, like you mentioned. But there's obviously kind of a, like, where does he finish for the remainder of the season? Is going to be a lot closer to, say, between, I don't know, closer to maybe wide receiver 15, maybe even, maybe a little bit higher than that versus where he's at now, which is, you know, top 5. He's had a lot of touchdowns, only one game without a touchdown. He's had 2 games over 4 catches. The other ones are all 4 catches. He's a tough one to put on. He's one where, like you said, you're playing with house money. If you're playing in a league where it's really shallow, and those leagues are always tough. Like, I hate playing in those leagues. But he's a great person to add into a trade with. You can sell him at even like a lower value just because you want to get the upgrade in case his value completely drops. But if you're playing in a really deep league, I mean, having these types of players in your second and third flex are just, they're just brutal to go up against.
They are. And it's going to be, he's another player that's, which would probably why I bring him up. It's tough to trade because, like you said, a lot of people, especially when you picked him off waivers, most people probably picked him off waivers. It's going to take a while for that to kind of wear off. People are going to look at him. It's like, okay, the numbers are really nice, but who am I, you know, am I going to trade you Mike Evans straight up? Like if you had Chark, and somebody, would you offer him to somebody for Mike Evans straight up, or are you keeping Chark? Like, who'd you rather have, Chark or Evans?
Evans. I mean,
me too. I mean, but that's, he's like what, 27 more points than Mike Evans. And you look at Chark's schedule.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously we can look at what his average is week in, week out. He's had one really good blow up week, which is nice to know that he can do it. But yeah, we're still going with Evans. DJ Chark also has less targets than, well, he's in the Mike Evans targets range right now. DD Westbrook, Mike Evans, he's down there. He has less targets than Sammy Watkins, for example. He runs about usually about 70-ish percent of the routes, you know, so he's making use out of his targets and his routes, which is why I think that without these touchdowns, his story's a little bit different. And I'd move him if I could, for sure.
Would you do? Here's a trade. So I'm looking at this kid in our league's roster that has Chark, just to kind of give like a good example. Just that's easy. So this kid in one of our leagues has Chark and Todd Gurley. Would you, if you owned Christian McCaffrey and somebody offered you Gurley and Chark, are you doing it?
No, it's just way too high up the totem pole.
Okay. All right. If somebody, if you owned Alvin Kamara and somebody offered you that, are you doing it?
And it was Chark and Todd Gurley?
Yeah.
With the week that Todd Gurley may or not be injured, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, this is part of the reason why I throw Gurley in here is, right, you know, maybe it's a separate topic for a different day. But he's another guy that I would want to move. He's clearly just not the same player. Hasn't gone as bad as what we feared it might potentially be, you know, go. But he's clearly not getting the volume either in terms of carries, catches, touchdowns, none of it. I think he's a good player, but he's done well enough. And he's got the Gurley, he's got that name cachet, where I think you could package him with Chark to help out with some of the name credibility in that trade, you know, add a little bit of sex appeal to it and ship them for probably not, whoever owns McCaffrey ain't trading him, but
No, and I
that's
think
that's a combo that I would look to trade.
Yeah, I totally agree. I still think they're going up too high on the sex appeal list here with Kamara. I mean, he's not necessarily the same player as he was last year, but a lot of his production was through touchdowns, and he's only had one game with touchdowns where he happened to get two in that game, one receiving, one rushing. Other than that, he hasn't scored a touchdown. And so he still managed to get over 20 points without a touchdown. And then, you know, the only 1 week under 10. Granted, these aren't the best numbers, but he's going to get Drew Brees back. So, yeah, I'm keeping Kamara in that instance. And overall, I'm just keeping Kamara. It's hard to trade some of these super studs.
Agreed.
So let's see. A name that I really want to bring up, I haven't talked about him in at least a week or a couple episodes here. My little Binky, that's been helping keeping all my teams alive and striving very healthy. I'm a little worried here on what to do. Austin Eckler, I think that we had the first 4 weeks, right? And then we got the big news on Gordon. Then Eckler was not tradable, right, after that, more or less. And then he goes out and does really well. Now it's almost like, I bet you can get a pretty solid haul for Eckler because, and let me know if you're thinking the same thing, because that was a little bit of a weird ass game flow. And to expect that as they kind of incorporate Melvin Gordon more and more, I think right now Austin Eckler's value might be really nice to move on to. I might need to seriously consider throwing some out there. I mean, where do you think Austin Eckler's value is, and would you consider moving him?
He's a tough player because he's just, I mean, even it was a weird game last week, but he's going to be the one that catches the passes. And this is one of the things that we talked about with Melvin Gordon. Yes. Even when Melvin Gordon comes back, Austin Eckler has, there's something to be said for him being there those first 5 weeks without Melvin Gordon. And I think, or first 4 weeks rather, I don't know what you'd get for Eckler. Cause I feel like you're not going to, in most cases, you're not going to get enough to make it worth it. Now we could throw out some
perfect,
players. For
he's
example.
A perfect complement player to get a stud, right? I mean, he's the perfect person that you match up with, say, a Marlon Mack. You know what could Marlon Mack and Austin Eckler get you? Which I happen to own in a couple leagues, both of them.
And you say McCaffrey is too high up on the totem pole. You can't go too much lower if you're giving Marlon Mack, who's a solid bet to get you 17 to 20 points every week. And with that offensive line, the amount of touches he gets, and then somebody like Eckler, who's just who can be a complete monster. And then, you know, if Melvin Gordon gets injured or anything crazy happens with him, just look out. I don't think you can go too much lower. Like you're not trading both of them for Aaron Jones, who just blew up, right? You're not trading them for what are the running backs? And you would probably trade both of them for Dalvin Cook, right? You'd probably,
yeah, but and you bring up a good
but
point.
But even
though.
Even that's close though. I don't know if yeah. I think we're selling these guys short.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, too, because I remember two weeks ago, Julio Jones just came off another good game. I was looking to get Julio. The guy offered me Juju and Marlon Mack. Marlon Mack came off a bad game. Juju was doing Juju types of things. And I still said no, which fast forward 2 weeks, Julio hasn't done anything, looks good, because I don't want to hurt my depth. Again, like if you get DJ Shark or you get Austin Eckler as your second or third flex, I mean, your team becomes so ridiculous, is such a ridiculous hard out. Now, yeah, granted, DeAndre Hopkins, Julio might have the highest upside out of all those players, or in your case, Dalvin Cook, but 1 week that they're not able to play really hurts your team, assuming we're talking about a league that's pretty deep and all these players are starting.
Yep.
I'm still kind of curious though, because as your point, you know your analysis on like he's still going to catch the ball. I think everyone still sees Eckler as that, and there might be a really good situation here to trade Eckler where he's only the six catch reception guy, and he's no longer the touchdown guy, and you might need a weird game script for him to kind of get elevated. I mean, this might be the spot before you kind of see a normal game script where he catches six balls for 50 yards and you say, hey, he's 11 points. That's nice. I can start that every week. But let's face the facts. Like, that's still only 11 points.
this would be an idea. If you are going to trade Eckler, this might be as good a spot as any, because everybody – last week was the first real week with Melvin Gordon back. So everybody was like, let's just see how this looks. Everyone was kind of scared to trade for him. And now we saw how that looked. And it, for both people that just look at the box score and just see, oh, he got, you know, all these 20-plus fantasy points. Okay. Now, sigh of relief. Now we can go trade for him. Like this – whereas if he puts up like 4 or 5 fantasy points and Melvin Gordon dominates – the touches and you know all that stuff, then it's going to be really hard to trade for him. Now he's going to go back and forth, so now is as good time as any, but it doesn't come without risk, because there's a chance that Austin Eckler is pretty much this close to the same guy, or at least 70% of the guy he was, you know, to this point for the rest of the season.
All right, you got anyone else?
Yeah, my last player I want to get your thoughts on. This is the last player, Marquise Brown. Ever since week one, he's still getting the targets. They're still trying to get him the ball. He just hasn't had those breakout games since week one. He had a touchdown last week, luckily, to get him to 11 fantasy points. But he's a player that I don't know what your thoughts on him are. My thoughts on Marquise Brown is I feel like he came into the season with a lot of hype. Lamar Jackson's had a breakout season, so he's helped elevate Marquise Brown's, you know, the sex appeal associated with Marquise Brown. And I just feel like you could probably trade Marquise Brown as another kind of one of these second player in a 2-for-1 deal. I think Marquise Brown still has value, where I'm never going to be comfortable starting him unless it's a cake matchup like it is this week in Cincinnati. I think Marquise Brown is somebody that you could – at least sell the matchup with Cincinnati is another reason why he has value. What do you think about Marquise Brown as somebody that you might look to trade if you own him?
Did Marquise Brown get dinged up last week and leave the game?
So he's injured right now. He was spotted on the field in practice, but he's battling an ankle injury.
He left early though last week, right, or no?
Not sure.
Okay, and this is what the tough part about trying to manage. And the reason I asked is I was just looking up his snaps, and he had a big drop last week in snap percentage. So if that was due to injury, then that sounds more reasonable. He increased literally every single week from week 1 to week 4 and then dropped. I went up to 81% week 4 and then 46% week 5. So he had a big drop. I mean, he's the type of person where he's still going to get you most likely close to 10. So he's okay to have as your kind of boom bust last flex guy. And if he goes off kind of like Will Fuller, he reminds me of like Will Fuller, although I trust Will Fuller because I've seen him do it more and I like the offense better and the quarterback better. But I mean, he's similar, right? Like you're going to be hopefully getting 10. And if you're not getting 10, he might go off. But to your point, he's an excellent throw-in player. I would definitely throw him in. If you went after him on waivers after week one, you haven't really been able to have too much success as you might thought, kind of rolling him out there week in and week out. I mean, after week two, even against a KC juicy matchup, 2 catches and 4 catches and 3 catches, nothing really appealing there.
Yeah, I think he's a good second player to throw in a deal. I mean, I don't think week one, I don't see that happening too many times for the rest of the season. And I think he's going to be in one of these situations where he's going to be a low volume, kind of boom or bust, touchdown dependent, wide out. And I think that he's due to some of the sex appeal with Hollywood Brown. Like he's got some of that sex appeal, which is our phrase of the day, apparently, sex appeal.
And if you just look at the schedule, I mean, at this point in the season, especially when you've got a good record, I'm always looking at the schedule. I can't help it to some degree. I'm not making every decision based on it. I'm just looking at it. And if he has a good week against Cincinnati, I would definitely start throwing him out in trades because he has one game. So you're not trading him on a bye. He's playing in Seattle, which is, you know, potentially like fine. And then he has a bye, then New England. But he also plays San Fran week 13 and Buffalo week 14. So I think not only is he good to move on from today, if he has a good game, you can maybe get more from him. All right, last player, Seth, I want to mention. I think this person might be a sneaky buy-low candidate. Not too many people we've talked about as a buy-low candidate. I don't think you're going to love the name. But I've been keeping a closer eye on him because he's on one of my teams, and that's Damian Williams. He actually out-snapped LeSean McCoy last week. I'm going to try and bring up these numbers here. I think mostly because they were playing from behind, and he's kind of more of their pass-catching person. But still, he came back. He was injured for a couple weeks. He didn't do much last week. So I think he's gone completely underneath the radar. And I'm not saying you have to give up a lot for him, but he played 56% of the snaps, which is more than McCoy or Darrell Williams at 22%. He's their pass-catching person. Sammy Watkins might be out. I mean, he's a Kansas City person. Kansas City has struggled the last 2 weeks. Pat Mahomes threw one touchdown in the last 2 weeks. Do we think that's seriously going to continue? No. I think this might be a perfect spot to take a shot at someone on an offense like Kansas City's. Your thoughts?
I love it. I like him a lot moving forward. I think that a lot of the the worries about LeSean McCoy were, as it turns out, very justified. But I think can LeSean McCoy hold up? Who knows? He's what, 32 years old? And I still like Damian Williams was really good last season. It's a great offense, a great matchup this week. He's a player that even with LeSean McCoy healthy, you should be able to start and expect 10 points from him. And he's clearly got the upside, which he demonstrated last season. So I think this is as good a time of any to trade for Damian Williams. And we talk about, you know, giving up two players for one and two for one. Well, he's a player that I think I would like getting if I was getting two for one, right? If I was giving up one player to get two, Damian Williams is the perfect player
that you want to, as a second.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because he's fairly low risk at this point. Like all of the risk is baked into his value.
Yep.
You're not trading for the Damian Williams that you would have had to trade for week one.
He's also got a week 12 bye, so you don't have any buys coming up. I mean, his schedule on paper looks not that great, but I've completely omit that when it comes to Kansas City. And they're going to get Tyreek Hill back, so, you know.
Again. Which is going to help Kelsey, which is going to help all of them. And, yeah, Patrick Mahomes and that offense, it's just they're all completely matchup proof. It's just varying degrees of how dominant they're going to be. That's the only thing matchups really, you know. So I like it. I do.
All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We're the NFL Talking Heads, and this was What to Do with These Players. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Try saying that three times fast. With your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull. We'll catch you next time.